Hello, everyone. We welcome you today to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Today is Sunday, September 22nd, 2019. We are here at the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we are very grateful you could join us. We will start this morning with our morning prayer.
From page 165 of Miscellany. Goodness never fails to receive its reward, for goodness makes life a blessing. As an active portion of one stupendous whole, goodness identifies man with universal good. Thus may each member of this church rise above the oft-repeated inquiry, "What am I?" to the scientific response, "I am able to impart truth, health, and happiness, and this is my rock of salvation and my reason for existing." Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you very much. Okay, and we will go to our watching point.
Watch number 384. Watch against discouragement when a problem seems prolonged. When leaves are falling and you clean off your sidewalk, you do not become discouraged when a fresh crop falls. You continue to sweep them off until the tree is bare. When you meet an error, you should regard it as finished. If it seems to present itself again in the same form, why not look upon it as a fresh problem rather than an old one? The leaves look alike each morning, but they are not. Remember that part of the trick of error to lower your morale is to cause you to feel that you have accomplished nothing by presenting itself in the same guise day after day. End quote.
Thank you. This was one of the watching points that meant the most to me years ago. Any comments on this?
He's just got the best analogies and really makes you see what he's trying to get across easily. So I love that.
We have a lot of leaves at our house, a lot of trees. So I thought about, you know, we left the leaves and didn't clean them off every once in a while, it would just pile up like crazy. And they do look alike. And sometimes it looks like you hadn't done anything. But then if you don't keep at it, it would pile up and get overwhelming. So I thought, to me, even doing it every day, you're chipping away at it.
And that bottom layer always, that's you really got to dig up the grass.
That's again. Right. That's right.
The same as making the window cleaner and cleaner so the sun can come through.
Thank you. Were we getting an echo if you are on have a computer or
speakerphone.
Yeah, speakerphone, you can't do it. You've got to turn it off. Thank you. This is the trick of error to make you think the same problem day after day after day. You're making no progress. I certainly thought this when I was going through a lot of difficulties. I was making no progress. But Mrs. Eddy has said, if you're working at it, you're making progress, whether you seem to see it or not. And for the reasons just brought out. You are keeping your window clean each day. If you don't, it piles up. Pretty soon you can't even see through the window. Or the pile of leaves gets so unmanageable and so high and big, you don't even feel like you have the strength to go out and clean them up. So keep at it day by day and don't be discouraged. Dear Mr. Carpenter, all these encouraging things he gave us in his 500 watching points. All of you, if you don't have that book, you should have it. It's a treasure. Anyone else on this watching point? Well, and what I wanted to say too is after a while, a long while, I saw how much progress I actually had been making. It finally, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So never doubt that. It's a very common fallacy.
And it'll try you regardless of where you are in your spiritual journey. You know, people who have been very successful at practicing Christian Science and are helping others and are doing a great deal for the cause, it's going to try them even more. So if you're feeling discouraged after all the work you've done, well, you can rejoice that you're doing something useful and recognize that the devil's trying to get you to stop doing what God has for you to do.
Thank you.
And just see it for what it is. When you're with God, when you're doing your best, you are making progress.
And remember, in science and health, let unselfishness, goodness, and justice, love, the kingdom of heaven reign within us. And sin, disease, and death will what?
Diminish until they finally disappear.
Yes, diminish until they finally disappear. So instead of focusing on your problem, focus on those qualities. Are you expressing them every day? And then all of the other will diminish until they finally disappear, because they were never the truth anyway. Okay. Nancy, would you read the golden text, please?
Sure. And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.
Thank you. And of course, our subject today is matter. And this is a beautiful lesson written by Amanda, on mainly on idols. So, Florence, I'd like you to tell us what you wrote in your form, which speaks to this, addresses this idea of idol worship.
Well, I think before Christian Science, I thought idols were, you know, put a little stone somewhere or a statue somewhere and worship. This was my thought of idols. But it's interesting how much our bodies can become idols because of how much time they occupy through every day. And I just said that how much are the thoughts about my body? How much are the thoughts about my body occupying my thinking every day? Does my body not get enough time while I get ready for the day? Should I spend any more time dwelling on every wrinkle, every pound I gain, every pimple, every ache or pain? And Webster, I like what he says about idols. He says, this is the 1828. He says, anything on which we set our affections, that to which we indulge an excessive and sinful attachment. And he gives an example from the Bible, little children, keep yourselves from idols. And then he says, an idol is anything which usurps the place of God in the hearts of his rational creatures. So, and then I said that I have learned we have more idols than one would believe. Examples are our bodies, personalities, habitual thoughts that consume us, desired ambitions that occupy our thoughts, others' faults that dominate us, false beliefs that we allow to discourage, belittle, frustrate, anger us, or conduct our lives other than the love of God. And are any of these worth it? We know that absolutely not. Thus we should heed 1 John 5:21, little children, keep yourselves from idols. Amen. And then I said, we have been given a way out of being idolaters. That is to get the correct view of your immortal selfhood, to see that you are an embodiment of right ideas, spiritual, made perfect in the image and likeness of God. Preoccupying thought with this would help us be present with the Lord and absent from the material sense of body.
Thank you. That is beautiful. That should be an article, Carol.
I was just writing.
that describes it to a T. So think about it and think about what idols do you have and look over that list. Because we all can get into it. And one I've been having people ask me about recently that I'd like to talk about is exercise. Especially people who, they've been perhaps raised in science, but they're new to our church and they come, you know, and they have all these exercise things they do. So who would like going to the gym or running or in marathons and other things? So who would like to speak to this?
I remember something, and I don't know where I read it, but it was a woman approached Bicknell Young. He was on a horse, and she said to him, "Oh, Mr. Young, you're riding to have exercise or to make yourself more healthy." And he said, "No, because I'm healthy, I can ride."
Thank you. So they asked him the stupidest question. Oh, my God. As they did Mrs. Betty. And they're always trying to trap it. And like Christ Jesus, he always had the right answer. Thank you, Janet. Anybody else?
Well, I think you have to do it for the glory of God. That's the motive behind it. That should be the motive behind it. I know when I go out to run, and I do that several times a week, and I just have that as quiet time for myself. And a lot of times I get really wonderful thoughts just being alone with God.
Thank you. And that's in our responsive reading. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's.
It reminds me of, I think, what was said here once about Mrs. Eddy being asked if she, I guess a worker saying that they didn't like doing any physical work, and she said, "I didn't know we did any physical work in this house." I guess that's the thought behind what you do and the motive behind it is kind of the most important thing about it, what we think about it rather than the thing itself.
Thank you very much. That's exactly right. It's what you think about it. Why are you doing it? And, you know, now they have all these things, you know, that measures your how much you sleep, how much you, your heart rate, your this, your that. And if you're in it for that, well, as I told someone, if you get into it that way, you're going to have another boatload of beliefs.
It's called self-quantification.
So. Okay.
Whatever.
Well, I just think it's just, you know, knowing about self here.
Yeah.
We're trying to let that go.
You're trying to let that go. The more you think about it, just as Florence described, you know, when you get up in the morning, oh my gosh, I got to do this. I got exercise. I got to, and you're doing it to keep yourself fit. Well, that's the wrong motive. We live, or we can. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to mention also that I have known Christian scientists that would rationalize that there was no matter, and then they would eat, I guess what could be called a pretty terrible diet. I mean, like fast food, fried food. And they were obese, and I also think that also that should be mentioned here. Like, it's not a license to not do anything and say there's no matter, and then also almost sort of abuse that that idea for your own, I guess, just to kind of deal with your own your whims, I guess.
Exactly right. That is one extreme.
Right.
The excess of anything is not right. It's not balanced. That's not principled. So that's not part of, you know, a perfect, you know, model that we're thinking of.
I don't remember if I read it or heard it, but we should exercise our spiritual dominion.
Yes.
Yeah, then you probably won't want so much food to begin with.
Yes, or need as much exercise.
Yeah.
We know that Jesus walked miles every day, didn't he? They walked everywhere. Sometimes, you know, in Bible study, we would figure out how far he walked. It was amazing. I don't know. On the other hand, you never hear of Mrs. Eddy doing any kind of exercise. She took carriage rides. Now, both of those people were in perfect health, weren't they? So again, it's your motive. If your day is so busy that you just don't feel you can exercise in certain ways, well, you know God takes care of you and your body. It's a temple of the living God. I think we live in a very sedentary society, and I know Bignell Young says this too. It's good to get up and walk or do something, not just sit all day. It's normal and natural to get exercise. And I find, as Elizabeth was saying, if I go out, I don't run, but I walk and I can pray and listen and commune with God or listen on my phone to things from our website. It can be a very holy time. And that's, to me, I like to spend at least some of the day doing that if time allows me. And sometimes I carve out that time.
And a test of the activity should be, does this bring me closer to God or not?
That's exactly it. I wrote an email to someone recently, and that is how I ended it. With any activity, and beware, you can go to gyms, and I know people who go to gyms and find it fine, but that is an atmosphere where most people are what?
Thinking of my body.
Thinking about the body, body beautiful, body this, mm-hmm. body that.
Well, more likely worshiping their body.
Yeah.
Worshiping the body, false idols. So if you go into that atmosphere, you're going to have to handle it. And with some of these things are beliefs about them, like running. You know, there are these beliefs of other things that will happen, and you know what they are. I don't have to go into them. It's true of a lot of things. You know, there are the other beliefs you've got to make sure you're handling. And it's true of eating. I believe in eating wisely, naturally, healthy foods, not junk food. If you're going to do that, you're going to have to handle all the beliefs of it. And there are a lot of the beliefs. And I don't have time to be handling all these stupid beliefs. So I'd rather not. And it's true, the idea of dieting, too. I mean, let God. We have on the website now that Peter V. Ross, it's beautiful, God proportions man. He does proportion us. And he should control us, our spiritual sense, how much we eat. As Florence said, in moderation, everything in moderation. When you're eating, that goes on to what Joanne wrote about. Matter, in which paganism and lust are so sanctioned by society that mankind has caught their moral contagion. At Science and Health, Webster defines lust as carnal fleshly appetite or desire, depraved affections and desires. So, am I lusting for food, fashion, physique, glamorous enhancement of my body or home? And these are all sanctioned by society. And they're easy to get caught up in, unless I constantly strive to see, and then the quote, that you are the embodiment of right ideas, spiritual, made perfect in the image and likeness of God, end quote. So you walk a fine line here. Don't topple over on the wrong side. What's your motive?
Does this bring you closer to God or not? And if something does bring you closer to God that you enjoy, great. If it doesn't, beware. And then there's, as Michael explained, there are some people who take statements of Christian Science and are really stupid about them. To say that there is no matter, and then to lust after matter and overeat or over anything is just stupid, and it's not obedient. It's not obedient. God proportions us. God cares for us, but there's a condition. And what's that condition?
Obedience.
Obedience. Thank you. If I'm not obeying God's law, well, how can I expect God to care for me in any way?
You know, I was thinking, Mrs. Evans was very athletic. She loved to roller skate. She was a great roller skater. She grew up in New York City, and there were all those roller rinks, and she taught us. We went to roller skating. We all learned how to roller skate. We would bike every weekend after church. We'd all get on our bikes and bike all over Plainfield. We took roller skating lessons, dance lessons on roller skates. She loved to play golf. She loved to swim. She loved to go in the ocean. She enjoyed life. She never considered any of those things wrong. But again, what is your motive? And if you do it for the joie de vivre, so to speak, you come back feeling happy and better. But if you're driven to do it, I got to do it. I got to do this 2 hours a day, and I got to do it. And goodness, I got to weigh myself, and I got to count out every single calorie. Well, that's a lot of fun, isn't it? People fall flat on their faces when they do it. They can maybe do it for a few months or whatever, but it doesn't work because it's not normal or natural. So, and what is this thing called matter? What is this thing called matter? And I thought the way that Florence ended this, you know, absent from the body, present with the Lord. That's what it's all about. The more you think about matter, the more you think about all the list of things Florence mentioned, it just becomes more and more real. You have created an idolatry, an idol, I should say. You've become an idolater, and you've created an idol, and you will suffer the consequences. And it can creep up on you. You can start off with good motives, but then, you know, maybe you get into it a little too much. So watch it. Watch your thought. Anybody else? Because this is important. It comes up fairly often in the practice, at least for me.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I've noticed. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
With exercising, I used to be, well, obsessed about exercise and addicted to exercise, you could say. And before Christian Science, for many years, I was even an amateur triathlete. So I was doing a lot of exercising. And I noticed that my intention was mainly just to gain people's accolades, you could say. And at the same time to look perfect, you know, typical societal response. And so I basically, when I got sick, I stopped exercising completely. And just recently, after having, been studying Christian Science for about 1.5 years, I just got this feeling that I could exercise again. And I have been afraid of doing that just to not get back to that addictive process. But this week, at the beginning of the week, I just got this intuition, which for me felt like, okay, this is God telling me something, that I don't have to be afraid of it. And after also reading the article by Reverend Kratzer on the law of right feeling, I started working with that, and I said, okay, this fear is not from God. And I started using his words, no connection between those feelings and the love, peace, the joy that comes from God. And I just started exercising, doing a little bit of Pilates. And I was really feeling the joy. And I could say that I was feeling a joy that I had never felt before while exercising. And then I was doing really well, and I was actually thinking of God while I was doing the Pilates, which was interesting for me, a very new experience. And when I finished, I thought, oh, I can do more. And suddenly I felt the difference. The moment I had the thought I could do more, I felt bad. I can't even describe the feeling. And I said, no, stop. That is not God's will anymore. So it was very interesting to make that experience and just apply what Reverend Kratzer basically recommends in his article.
Thank you very much. That's a beautiful, beautiful testimony. And so true. You know, I know someone, well, her father, he was not a scientist. He kept his body in perfect condition, perfect everything, ate perfectly. And then he got something and passed on suddenly. And this daughter was, oh my gosh, how could this happen? He followed all the medical rules, the mortal rules. Well, the mortal rules don't work. It was done godlessly. So absolutely, if it brings you joy and you're in a lot of exercises, mindless, you know, I like to swim sometimes. It's easy for me. I sing hymns. I pray. I look up at the sky. And it makes the time go quickly. If I'm just doing laps, well, that's no fun. It's true about walking. So it does bring me closer to God, and I feel refreshed afterwards. And the minute that stops, as Candy says, you're just doing it for whatever, you should stop it. Not of God anymore. So it's absent from the body and present with the Lord. This is what it's all about. It always is about this, whatever activity you're doing. and is it bringing you closer to Him? Do you feel refreshed and closer to Him or not? But never to be obsessed with it. That is mortal mind pushing and driving, not God. So I wanted to take a little bit of a detour, and we're going to get back to matter, but I wanted to tie up a few things that were said last week. Now, Joanne in her forum writes, and we touched on this yesterday, and they cast him out, referring to whom?
The blind man.
The blind man in the story.
Formerly blind man.
Yes, formerly.
Formerly blind man, yes, in the story. And Dumoulin translates this as they excommunicated him. And then further says, when the door of the synagogue was shut, the door of the kingdom of heaven was opened. In other words, it was then possible for the healed man to fully recognize and acknowledge the Christ truth. I thought this was similar to what happened to our church. When the Boston organization excommunicated us, the door of the kingdom of heaven, all good, was opened, and those who believed and adhered to Mrs. Eddy's pure Christian Science came and supported us. The chains of a material sense of church were broken, and the Christ truth was then able to prosper and flourish as never before. We did talk about that, but she wrote that very well, and that's exactly what did happen. And last week, in talking about Paul Smiley, and I read the letter that he wrote to Dale W. in Virginia, I did ask his good friend who lives in Texas and who lives with his Paul Smiley sister about the Gethsemane organization foundation, and she knew all about it. She was there. She was part of it. And she said it was started in 1985 as a non-profit entity to accomplish the marketing, distribution, and all that goes along with that, so that Paul could sell his book.
His biography of Mrs. Eddy.
His biography of Mrs. Eddy, which he did. And she said, and then all kinds of letters were sent. After the initial offering of the biography, Paul wrote many articles on pertinent CS topics. We proceeded to publish and distribute those also free of charge to those listed in the journal. Talk about a labor of love. We ended up with a mailing list of 5,000 plus households, and which we estimated represented approximately 7,000 who love their leader. I like that number, right? After our initial offering, free of charge, we would charge when someone requested copies. And requested copies, they did. So they went out all over. But she said there were some who, especially to the churches, who threw them out, didn't want to have anything to do with them. And then there were some who read and listened. And of course, he was saying in all his letters and in his book that Mrs. Eddy was the woman in the apocalypse. I liken it to Revelation, the letter to the churches, right? Wake up, letter to the churches. And then it was his hope that the board of directors, that there would be enough members of the board of directors where they would come in agreement and agree to this, but that did not happen. And he passed on in the early 90s. And then Nancy, her name is Nancy, and Paul's sister took this work up. And one thing he had wanted to do was to amend his book. Now, and this is why the books that Keystone gave us, they were on the way to the dump, because these were the books that were not amended. Now, as far as I know, there's nothing wrong with these books. They were just added to. And maybe she said there were some rough things maybe made a little plainer. But then they, meaning Nancy and Paul's sister, because Paul had passed on, and because it was Paul's intent, they added things to the book and they kind of smoothed over a few things. And now that book, the amended book, is for sale on Amazon if anyone wants it. And Gary and I did order it.
Yeah, it's in a paperback version.
Yeah. That's how you'll know the difference when you see them online. It's paperback and it's 2008 or something.
The original was hard copy and the revised is paperback.
So the paperback version, and the name of the book is Mary Baker Eddy, The Prophetic and Historical Perspective. You can get that on Amazon. And then she said by 2017, there was no more requests for anything and their funds had dwindled. So the Gethsemane Foundation came to an end. But we continue that work, which she's very happy about. And we've talked about, as far as changing the organization, I don't think so. They are illegitimate. They are not Mrs. Eddy Science. The sad thing is that people think that it's Mrs. Eddy Science, which is why they won't give it up, or it's what she intended for the organization to be. But we have since learned it is not. And I can't change that, and you can't change it either. It's fact. This is fact. They disobeyed her manual. And they disobeyed a lot of things. And so we leave it alone.
Doesn't seem like anyone should feel bad about that, because Jesus wasn't able to change the Pharisees organization.
Well, that's right. That's true.
At least we have this place.
Yes. I once did feel bad, but I don't anymore, because we have to focus on what we have to do, as we talked about yesterday, why there's the daylight to get all this stuff out, why we have this light now to do it and the means to do it. And God has provided us with the means and the ways. Thank God for that. And someone on YouTube questioned, because I had named last week's roundtable God's Abundant Supply. Well, we didn't talk about abundant supply. Well, we started off with a smiley letter, but it got into that. And to recognize Mrs. Eddy as the woman in the apocalypse is part of abundant supply. And then we talked about two rules of abundant supply, which were what?
Gratitude.
Gratitude to God. And?
Unselfishness?
Yes. Unselfish. Unselfed purpose, as Florence read in her opening prayer. And then there's another one. I won't say it's the only, but there's a third one, which is also very important, which we didn't mention. And what is that? Something we all do here in Plainfield.
Give back?
Yes, and what's that called?
Tithe.
Tithing. Mm-hmm. Yes, tithing. We give back. And in our church, we don't ask for anything. Most everything is free. And so we count on your tithing, and you can be assured the money given to this church is spent judiciously,
wisely,
and for the greatest good there could ever be, with this, which is getting true science out to the world. So I just wanted to wrap that up. And so also online, Jeremy put to our title,
A sobering letter.
A sobering letter, yeah, because it was a very sobering letter. And someone did ask us for it. And if you do want that letter, Jeremy would be happy to send it to you from Smiley. Any questions or comments on that before we can go back to this week's lesson? Okay, well, the Bible also says, the Bible lesson, know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. So if you want to obey the medical rules and laws, if you want to obey that, you are going where? The sin unto death. Yeah.
I mean, that's the basis of material law, so-called. That you grow, you mature, and then you die.
And what do we know in science?
Forever.
Forever. Yes. Forever young. And we live our lives that way. We're not thinking about, oh, what's going to happen, and we were going to retire, and we've got to downsize, and we have to do this. No, what does Mrs. Eddy say about all of this? We're getting better, stronger, wiser. If we're demonstrating the science, we should be, and not bowing down to these false laws, matter laws.
Spiritual maturity, not decrepitude.
Yes. All of those beliefs, and they need to be handled daily. And that's why, as Linda was saying, Mrs. Evans gave us this years ago, I'm ageless, diseaseless, and deathless because God made me so. You work with it, and I don't care what your human age seems to be.
I've read somewhere that Mrs. Evans added it on, and I saw it. It's not that I thought it up. She said, debtless.
Oh, debtless, huh? Okay. Well, good. Ageless, diseaseless, deathless, and debtless.
Well, and that just means
live
your life in so fully in such obedience to God that you don't owe God anything.
And he will meet all your needs.
I don't remember the exact words, but in Florence's beginning prayer, it said something like, goodness brings a life of blessings.
Yes, it does. And in the lesson in Science and Health, when we endow matter with vague spiritual power, that is, when we do so in our theories, for of course we cannot really endow matter with what it does not and cannot possess, we disown the Almighty. And what did you say about that, Jeremy?
Well, the 1828 Webster says disown is to deny, not to own, to refuse to acknowledge as belonging to oneself. And I don't know, when I read that, I got this really sick feeling. And it made me realize how, you know, the things that I was doing before, why I felt so, you know, small and lost. So it gave me a better sense of why, of what moral idiocy is actually. So I was very grateful for that.
Thank you. And, you know, this is why it's so important that we are not endowing matter with this spiritual power, that we think it has power over us, whether it calls it your organs. You see, and here again, this is why you have to be careful of all this exercising and dieting. You're giving your organs, your heart, your stomach, you're starting thinking about all these organs. it's an endless thing. It's a slippery slope, and you don't want to go there. So the less you think about it, better off you are. So, go ahead.
One thing I've noticed is that when I'm studying Christian Science or just listening to something, I'm never hungry, although by human standard I would be. But whenever I feel close to God, or whenever I feel I feel the love of God, let's put it that way, then I don't feel any hunger. And for me, that's a very sure sign that I can't explain it, but it's just something that I've observed. Whenever I'm really immersed in the study of Christian Science or just listening to something and I'm totally inspired and feel God's love, I don't feel any pain or any hunger.
It's wonderful, and it is absolutely true. Absolutely, yes. And, you know, it said Mrs. Eddy, she ate very simply. I know when we've visited Chestnut Hill and heard, you know, she, and for breakfast she would eat corn mush. I thought, corn mush, that sounds disgusting. But I read about it. It's just pretty much, you know, like cream of wheat, only it's made with corn. And, you know, she ate simply, and she didn't eat a lot of meat, or was simple meals, and she wasn't obsessed with her next meal. So, yeah, when you're in the science, you're not going to be always thinking about that. So thank you, Candy. Now, what was the first idolatry?
Belief in matter.
Thank you. It's in the lesson. Faith, well, that's thank
faith you. Faith in matter. Yes.
Thank you.
And what's the difference?
You trust it.
you look
good.
To it.
Yeah. That's good.
For
thank
your
you.
Substance for your health.
You look to it. Yes, trust it. Thank you. So watch what you trust.
I mean, we all believe in something. We all trust in something. We all have faith in something. I mean, you can't go through the day without having faith in something. So it's good to be aware of what you actually have faith in.
But after many disappointments, then you know what to trust. Have faith in, that's all.
Yes, yeah, because the other will fail you time and time again. Mrs. Eddy says we're like tired children turning from this faith in matter, checking all your vital signs. And what now do the quantum physicists say about matter and Albert Einstein?
Well, that's an interesting point because, you know, Einstein led kind of a revolution in physics to lead to a better understanding of what matter is and how it works. And Einstein once said that, you know, whenever he was examining something, he would always ask the question, he said, if I were God, how would I make this work? And so he discovered things through revelation, not through experimentation. And modern day nuclear physicists, quantum physicists, understand that matter is not what it appears to be. It's not like it's a substantial thing in and of itself. It's a composition of forces.
Yeah, people now call it
energy. There is no matter.
That it's not a thing in and of itself. It's forces. And, you know, as they get deeper and deeper into the examination of how matter kind of does whatever it does, their descriptions of how it works are more metaphysical than physical.
It really is nothing.
It's an illusion.
Yes. It's an illusion. It's sort of what you make of it. That's why when you get on the wrong side and make of it all this stuff, you've created an idol and a reality of something that in and of itself has no reality. And people think Mrs. Eddy's crazy for saying this.
Quantum physics also says when you observe something, you sort of lock it in. So even more reason not to keep checking yourself and observing everything.
Right. So, well, big on observation.
Einstein basically defined matter as energy. MC square is the formula he used.
Yeah, some people still think of that as, quote, material energy, but that's kind of a contradiction in terms, you know.
Energy be material.
Energy, you know, matter, energy. Well, and ultimately, when Einstein fled Germany and he spent the rest of his life in Princeton, he visited the reading room there often, and he visited the Christian Science Church often, and he had a copy of Science and Health, which he read, and he told people in the church, he said, you just don't know what is in this book. He referred to it as the ultimate science, because to think that a woman discovered this 80 years, you know, before he even had a glimpse that there was anything to it. So the physicists examine matter to come up with an explanation as to how it works. But they're getting closer and closer to realizing that it's not matter at all.
And Mrs. Eddy knows this, and in Science and Health, she'll say, you know, if you study anything further to its point, you'll come to Christian Science, because it is the universal truth. And so how stupid of us not to study it and love it and take full advantage of all the infinite possibilities it has. Now, in her book, Science and Health, and also in Prose Works, she answers these questions over and over again. And I'm just going to quote some from in Miscellaneous Writings, the chapter Questions and Answers. Is it possible, these are common questions, is it possible to know why we are put into this condition of mortality? Haven't we all asked that? It is quite as possible to know wherefore man is thus conditioned as to be certain that he is in a state of mortality. Over and over, she goes back to the idea that the earth is flat. We all thought it was flat, right? Not we, but the people in the past did, and they led their lives accordingly, but it wasn't. It wasn't what it appeared to be. So she's saying, who's saying we're in a state of mortality? The only evidence of the existence of a mortal man or of a material state and universe is gathered from the five personal senses. This delusive evidence science has dethroned by repeated proofs of its falsity. We must not consider the false side of existence in order to gain the true solution of life and its great realities. Now, I didn't read all of it, but you should. Because she's saying, she's debunking the whole myth that we are all in matter and mortal. Who says it? Mortal mind. It's not the truth. And there's a lot of evidence that it isn't. All the healings, what Christ Jesus did, what she did, what she established, is proof we're not in matter. And again, now the quantum physicists are saying the same thing, and others too. I mean, to some degree, New Age, it's all about being mental beings and not so physical. And then this, and I can only read part of it. If God does not recognize matter, how did Jesus, who was the way, the truth, and the life, cognize it? And she talks about how he did, walking over the waves and turning the water into wine. Then she says, and I love this, I've quoted it before, if you will admit with me that matter is neither substance, intelligence, nor life, you may have all that is left of it. And you have touched the hem of the garment of Jesus's idea of matter. Christ was the way. Since life and truth were the way that gave us, through a human person, a spiritual revelation of man's possible earthly development. So, tell me that it's neither substance, intelligence, nor life. You can have what's left of it. And that's a scientific statement of being. And then I'll have Gary end on this question, which I also love. And Mrs. Wilcox, in her book, goes into a lot more detail about matter, scientific translations, but it's all in Mrs. Eddy's works. So go ahead.
So this is Miscellaneous Writings, page 86. Is it correct to say of material objects that they are nothing and exist only in imagination? Answer. Nothing and something are words which need correct definition. They either mean formations of indefinite and vague human opinions or scientific classifications of the unreal and the real. My sense of the beauty of the universe is that beauty typifies holiness and is something to be desired. Earth is more spiritually beautiful to my gaze now than when it was more earthly to the eyes of Eve. The pleasant sensations of human belief, of form and color, must be spiritualized until we gain the glorified sense of substance, as in the new heaven and earth, the harmony of body and mind. Even the human conception of beauty, grandeur, and utility is something that defies a sneer. It is more than imagination. It is next to divine beauty and the grandeur of spirit. It lives with our earth life and is the subjective state of high thoughts. The atmosphere of mortal mind constitutes our mortal environment. What mortals hear, see, feel, taste, smell constitutes their present earth and heaven. But we must grow out of even this pleasing thraldom and find wings to reach the glory of supersensible life. Then we shall soar above as the bird in the clear ether of the blue temporal sky. To take all Earth's beauty into one gulp of vacuity and label beauty nothing is ignorantly to caricature God's creation, which is unjust to human sense and to the divine realism. In our immature sense of spiritual things, let us say of the beauties of the sensuous universe, quote, I love your promise and shall know sometime the spiritual reality and substance of form, light, and color, of what I know through you discern, of what I now through you discern dimly. And knowing this, I shall be satisfied. Matter is a frail conception of mortal mind, and mortal mind is a poorer representative of the beauty, grandeur, and glory of the immortal mind. End quote.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.